Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here for another exciting episode here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. I want to first thank my Heavenly Father for waking me up this morning and for blessing me. And I also want to say that my pastor did an awesome job yesterday as we were basically fellowshipping with Pastor Larry Saul's church, which was the atmosphere of, I think it's Christian Faith located in Vista. So we had an awesome time in fellowship. So today's topic, I want to get started, is an interesting topic. Because today we're going to be talking about how to talk to your kids about drugs and alcohol. Now, a lot of times we say, again, people ask me, Jeanette, where do you get these topics from? A lot of these topics are things that individuals really want to know but don't know how to get the answer. And sometimes I run across some of these scenarios, or not only just the scenarios, the topics in my therapy sessions, phone calls I receive. So I try to make the information based on what's needed in our community, in our homes, in our world, and basically to encourage, to empower, and to help individuals and to save lives. Now, when we start talking about drugs, especially when we're talking about our kids and our teenagers, there is an epidemic as it relates to drug and alcohol within our youth. As an adult and parent, we have a moral responsibility and a personal responsibility when it comes to our children, the children in our care, our nieces and nephews, kids in the community, and those that are around us. Now, as we know, as a parent, and not only as a parent, as an adult, we are a role model and one of the most important person in a child's life, whether we want to accept it or believe it or not. Now, with that being said, I was looking at what's called the HuffPost, and it indicated that if you think your teen is not using or at least experimenting with drugs, you need to wake up. And a lot of times I've learned that we know that they're using, but we want them to either do it in moderations, or we say it's no big deal, you know, at least they're not on crack. So we justify and we minimize things, but we really have to be more diligent when it comes to this topic, because even just this morning I woke up and I saw something on the news and they were talking about how they're looking at and they need more information when it comes to the legalization of marijuana and what's in marijuana. So now we're seeing things, it's taking a little twist. Now, with the information that I found, it indicated, according to the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse, 75% of high school students have used an addictive substance, and approximately 16% of the U.S. population ages 12 and over met a clinical diagnostic criteria for addiction to nicotine, alcohol, and other drugs. And I want to also talk about the vaping. Now, drugs appear to be easy to come by, with 44% of high school students indicating that they knew a classmate who sells drugs. Drugs are in the home, in communities of our youth. They're everywhere. There are children even in elementary school that have knowledge or have been exposed to drugs or alcohol. Now, in 2016, I found some information, and it indicated that alcohol remained the most common substance abused amongst teens. Marijuana came second, then prescription drugs was the most popular. There was also indicated in this study Oxycontin and Vicodin. And as we know, there's also an opiate epidemic going around. Now, sadly, there are about 1,600 kids trying prescription drugs for the first time every day. And let's not forget about the synthetic drugs or vaping. They are also on the rise. So what is a parent to do? Many parents are clueless when it comes to this. In addition to them being clueless, we need to start a conversation, keep it going. The conversation is to educate, prevent, empower, and save our children's lives before other people beat us to the punch. Learning the warning signs, we need to obtain information as to why children start using drugs and alcohol. Now, don't ignore this conversation, as your child may be at risk. Now, I'm going to give you the number to call if you're out there listening. You can call in at 516-387-1914. And if you're out there listening, please don't call me on my cell phone right now trying to make an appointment on my office, because it seems like every time right before I go on the air is when individuals want to give me a call. Now, if you don't want to speak or if you don't have any questions, or not say don't speak, if you have a question and you don't want to speak, you can email me at jabneylmft@gmail.com. If you're on the Blog Talk Radio link and you want to click to follow, you can do so. I will also be putting this information on YouTube, and it will also you can click on through Twitter. So let me log on my guest that's going to be doing this with me today. Good afternoon. This is Jeanette. Welcome to Precious Predicaments. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good morning, Jeanette. Or afternoon.
You know what? You are a trooper. I just want you to know I appreciate you, and I hope you play 17, because it drives me nuts when I go to Paula Casino and I play blackjack and don't play roulette, and I'm looking at 17 hit, 22, 10, my numbers. I'd be so mad at myself. So hopefully you are enjoying yourself, but I do appreciate you joining in on this conversation with me.
Thank you.
So tell them who you are. You ain't got to tell them where you at, but you can if you want to, but tell them who you are and what you do.
Hello, I'm calling in from Nevada, but I'm actually a social worker in California, in Orange County. I have worked with the military community, elderly families, children, currently with pregnant teenagers. Also in private practice with substance abuse and intimate partner violence. That's a little bit about me.
And you may be with your fiancé, but you know you should have took me with you, but it's okay. It's all good.
Actually, he's not here. He's listening in from overseas.
I was like, no, she didn't go and didn't go tell me this is where she at. No one. I was like, oh, but that's okay. That is okay. So basically, Ed Amalia is also works with me at the Center for the Treatment of Addiction, as I am also the executive director and owner of the Center for the Treatment of Addiction, which is an outpatient counseling center. Now, Amalia, this topic is very interesting, and it's interesting for a lot of reasons. And one of them has to do when we talk about how to talk to your kids about drugs and alcohol. And a lot of times, even when I was looking and I was doing my, I try to not do it at the end of the night because I'd be so stressed out, and I don't say stressed because I'm not stressed, but I'd be so burnt out during the day with all the work that we do. Part of it is starting this conversation. I've been, and it's been coming my way, as far as children using drugs, children overdosing, I'm listening to parents, I'm watching the kid, I'm seeing this pain. And you know, Amalia, it is very scary. It's very scary. And it's scary because a lot of times parents don't know how to start this conversation with their kids. And not only do they not know how to start this conversation, many people don't know the warning signs of if their kid is in trouble. And there's a lot of things lacking. There's a lot of information that's being misleading, the advertisement, and even as far as how old should my child be when we start this conversation. So those are some of the reasons why I chose this topic for today. Because I am sick and tired of not only some of the adults that we see, but also learning that some of the kids, the adults that we see, started using drugs at a very young age. Now, what do you have to say, or what do you want to add to this topic? Because we're going to be going on and on and on. What do you have to say?
I think it's very true, because in what you and I do in speaking, you know, running groups for substance abuse, most of our long-term users, I mean, the ones who have a true addiction, where it's a physical addiction, they're no longer can control their addiction. I think we've talked about what a true addiction is when the addiction takes over your control of your body. It's a physical addiction where your body is asking for whatever substance it is that you're addicted to. But in speaking with them, most of them can pinpoint the beginning of their journey towards addiction, and it all really begins at a very, very shockingly early age. I mean, mostly in middle school, so between what's middle school, 10 to 12 years old, or 12 to 14. But it's also the age where most youth join gangs, where they experiment unsupervised, so they have access to alcohol that's at home or painkillers that are at home, or they're going mm-hmm. through a traumatic change in their family dynamics, you know, a divorce or a death or something, a movement. You know, in our community, we have a lot of movement, you know, moving from one city to another school, making new friends. So there's a lot of trauma. And in my group, we have something called the addiction tree. And the root of all of our addictions, whether it's a substance addiction or, you know, an addiction of love or an addiction of gambling or an addiction of food or possessions, all of these addictions, the root of them all is that we are hiding some kind of shame or some kind of guilt or some kind of wound that we have not come to terms with. And when we are young, we just don't know how to cope. We don't have those coping mechanisms already. And if you're in the environment that exposes you to things like drugs or alcohol or sex or whatever unsupervised things that you can run into, then that's what your coping mechanism will be. When you just
right.
don't have a bed.
And you know what, Amalia,
that's
very interesting. I like the way you put that. And a lot of times when parents come to us and, you know, and they are struggling with this question, and they want to know why. Why do you
right.
use drugs? Because they think kids are supposed to be happy. Kids are supposed to be outside playing. Kids are supposed to enjoy their life. Now, the simple answer is, and as we know, drugs alter perception of reality.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, they don't want to deal with reality in ways that
mm-hmm.
often feel pleasant because they like the feeling. Drug
mm-hmm.
use may temporarily satisfy emotional or social needs for experimenting with young people. Many youth view drugs like what they call a Swiss Army knife, a tool
right.
with many functions. And when they look at it as a tool with many functions, some would say they use it to relax, they use it for pleasure, they use it for socialization, they use it for avoidance of emotional pain, a way to forget about problems, to satisfy curiosity, to avoid alienation, to find excitement, to feel like they're part of the crowd, to go to sleep, to wake up, to cope with failures, to relieve boredom, and or to simply infuriate their parents, just to piss their parents off. Now, as we know, some individuals or some youth are genetically programmed for the difficulties with addictions, meaning that there are other areas where individuals can be at risk, meaning if the parents have a history of addiction, if there's a lot of other things, and, you know, we're going to take mental health into consideration with co-occurring disorders. But the problem, and one of the things that we're finding is that even when we're talking about that they could be genetically programmed for difficulties with addictions, what other finds that curiosity is one of the things that start. My grandmother used to say, curiosity killed a cat, but we know satisfaction brought them back. But some things you don't want to play with in drugs is one of them, because
mm-hmm.
the drug use leads to dependence, and the challenges of dealing with addiction can become overwhelming. Because, you know, Amalia, one of the things that I'm finding is there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of pain. There is a lot of trauma. And now
mm-hmm.
I learned, too, we're now changing the way we're looking at addiction in regards to teaching conflict resolution skills and by doing trauma-informed care. Because that is, they're finding to be very helpful by addressing the pain. What do you think
right.
in regards about that, Amalia? Cause then we're going to start with, how do you start this conversation?
Yeah, I think for the list that you have, it's also a lot of, I think for a lot of my clients that I've run across, it was also self-medicating. So they had some
mm-hmm.
mental health that had not been diagnosed, you know, schizophrenia or hallucinations. And so just to calm the voices in their head, they began to turn to substances or to turn to alcohol or other addictions. And that's kind of how that was the opening, the key master, the one that opened the gate towards addiction.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
one of the things that Molly, you're talking about more adults, but kids,
right.
you can't diagnose a kid with schizophrenia, even though they may have audiovisual hallucinations. But the thing
right.
is, and when we're talking about that and starting with kids, individuals don't realize that sometimes the drug use can basically turn into what's called a chemical-induced psychosis, where
right.
I like using the analogy, we don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg. Is it a mm-hmm. mental health issue, or is it drug-induced, because the onset of the first drug use is very important, because depending on what you use, it could be LSD, it could be acid, it could be PCP. A person can have what's called an early trip, to where we don't know if it's actually started with that mental illness or if it was drug-induced. So even though a lot of the individuals we see are more adults, they started at a very young age. And part of the problem is the attitudes, the beliefs, and the perceptions of some of the parents. Now, it doesn't mean that all parents know that their kids are using drugs, but some parents feel that it's okay, especially when it comes to marijuana. For some reason, they think, well, marijuana is not bad. Well, at least they're not using crack, or they're not using LSD, or they're not using heroin, because we look at opiates as being very, very bad. But we know that the overdose in opiates is very high. But yet, I always tell individuals, it is easier to go through withdrawals and stop using any other drug besides alcohol. Because alcohol can cause seizures. Alcohol, a person can die from alcohol-related poisoning, and we minimize it. But yet some of these things are issues and substances that people find in their own home. So when we start talking about the conversation and starting the conversation, first you have to get the facts. There's some information I have in front of me, Amalia, and it's from the National Institute on Drug Abuse. And if anybody want to go to that website, they can go to drugabuse.gov, and they have some facts that parents need to know in regards to starting a conversation, and they also give them tips. You can start this conversation at any time, meaning, and it's a conversation that don't need to stop. Most of the time, Amalia, I found that the conversation starts when the child and guy already got in trouble because we missed the warning signs, which are some of the things that I want to bring up too. So we done missed it. Somebody done told you, you didn't want to believe it, and now you're trying to figure it out. Now you're trying to minimize, you're trying to hide it, or you may even be doing it with your child. So these are things that we also need to pay attention to. But starting that conversation, you can start at a very young age. But the one thing is, with this information, and I find this information to be very interesting, Amalia, especially when it's talking about marijuana, because it says, as a guide has shown, marijuana can affect the health and well-being of children and teens at a critical point of their lives, when they're growing, learning, maturing, and laying a foundation for their adult years. So as a parent, your children look to you for help and guidance in working out problems and in making decisions, including the decision not to use drugs. Even if you've used drugs in the past, you can have an open conversation about the dangers. Whether or not you tell your child about your past drug use is a personal decision. Because we're going to go into that, because some parents feel like they're being a hypocrite, or first thing the child will say is, well, you do it, or I did it with you. If you are a teen listening to this show and your parents have been to rehab, don't judge them based on what they did, because at least they had the strength and the courage to try to get clean and sober. So if they're telling you this, they're telling you for a reason. But if they choose not to tell you, it is their own personal decision. But experience can better equip us to teach others by drawing on the value of past mistake, and can explain that marijuana is significantly potent now, and we know a lot more about the potential harms and effects of marijuana on the developing brain. Now, the greater acceptance of marijuana use compared with use of other illegal drugs continues on the basis of differing opinions about the dangers. Because, like I said, people don't need, we minimize alcohol. And I remember even growing up, and I tell individuals when I do my groups, I'm not a recovering addict. I did not understand addiction. I did not understand for a long time why people use drugs and alcohol. And I'm going to tell you, my family, if they call in, they'll tell you, I'll mess up your high. If I saw people at my house smoking weed, I'd turn on the fan, blow any weed all the place. I used to pour my mother's alcohol out of her bottles and put water in it. You know, I was scared of sherm heads, and I ain't going to lie. I was literally scared. I would sick my dogs on them. And with heroin, we didn't know much about heroin in Compton, but I was traumatized because I remember there was a bad batch of heroin out, and my mother told us to stay in the house. I was like the little girl on the Rugrats. I was the one always starting something. I want to go to the store. So I'm going to get all the kids in the neighborhood to go to the store. And it was like there was a bunch of zombies among them. They were foaming at the mouth and all kind of mess. But I want to give parents some tips. If your kid come to you, be a good listener. Set clear expectations about drug and alcohol use, including real consequences. Not for following family rules. Help your child deal with peer pressure to use drugs. Also, get to know your child's friends and their parents. Monitor your child's whereabouts. Supervise teen activities and talk to your kids often. Because, Amalia, that pressure is out there. Now, I tell individuals, I was never pressured to do drugs, I guess because I was so hard-headed and I was my own person. But my thing was food. I was horrible when it came to food. Food was my addiction because it sure wasn't drugs or alcohol. Because I used to tell people I had violent tendencies and I ain't never seen a drunk want to fight. So I wasn't going to be walking around drinking, especially as a teenager, and get taken advantage of or let somebody beat me up that I never had a fight with because I was drunk. So I wasn't going to do that. So, Amalia, when do you think is a good time to talk to your kids? At what age?
I would say from the very beginning. I mean, as you're walking and you're seeing maybe someone smoking or someone in the park or doing something that, you know, that discussion, I'm thinking too fast. I can't take you speak. I think the discussion begins at an age-appropriate level. So when they're 5 or 6 and they ask you questions, why is someone homeless or why is someone, you know, going talking to themselves or why is someone smoking? You know, now that marijuana has become legal in several states, now, you know, I smell it everywhere I go since it's now legal in California. So the discussion can start at any age, as long as it's age appropriate and you know what your child knows and does know. And sometimes your child, once they're in middle school or even in elementary school, they have their friends who are telling them myths. So that's open discussion. If you don't already have it with your child, now is the time to say, you know, we're going to start opening the doors to having daily conversations about what you do in school, what your interests are. And as difficult it is to talk about sex and drugs, and the reality is that our youth is exposed to it. They probably know more about it than we do because that's what teenagers do. That's what they talk about because it's the taboo subject. And that's the hot topic. You know, I am in an LCSW supervision group, and my colleagues in there, they are school counselors. So I hear about what's going on in the middle schools. And as I hear the stories about the middle schools, that resonates with my adults because when my adults were in middle school, those were the things that they were doing. They were engaging in self-harming activities. They were engaging in, you know, bringing prescription drugs to school, selling them, fight, sex. You know, and also questions about their own self, because that's what adolescent development is when you are trying to find out who you are and who you want to be and who your friends are. And, you know, there's so much bullying going on and online bullying now. And so that's a very complicated time in our human lives is those preteen years and our teenage years. And unfortunately, that's also the time when we are exposed to very addictive behaviors, not just with substances, but like you said, with food or love addiction or, you know.
We're gonna keep it on drugs and alcohol, Amalia. Okay. I have a caller calling in. Let me give them a call because we want to stay with the drugs and alcohol, not the love and sex and the food because we got to keep it on topic. Now, how to talk to your elementary school kids about drugs. And even though it seems like just yesterday when your toddler mispronounced every word and all this other stuff, mm-hmm. but now they're going to school. And one of the things you indicated, Amalia, is yes, drugs are at school. Drugs are in elementary school, mm-hmm. too. Let me log on this caller, and then we're going to give them some more information. Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Jeanette? It's Crystal.
Oh, hi, Crystal. How are you doing? Okay, thank you for calling in on this topic. Okay, because we're talking about today how to talk to your kids about drugs and alcohol, and because a lot of times individuals don't know, especially parents, and you know where we grew up at, Crystal, our parents really didn't have that talk with us. We saw things, and you're younger than I am. So with me being, you know, the same age as Sean, our parents didn't just sit us down. We didn't know what was what going on in our neighborhood. It was a mess. So we knew about the drinking. We knew about the 40 ounces. We knew about the weed. Then we started seeing other things because we knew the drug dealers. We knew the drug houses. But I don't remember nobody having that talk with me. Now, when we talk about the D.A.R.E. program, they brought the D.A.R.E. program into our schools. But by that time, I was already grown, and that added more confusion to some kids because it enhanced their curiosity, and then some kids started telling on their parents. Now, drug awareness begins earlier than you might think, and research has shown us that kids as young as 9 years old began making decisions about how they respond to offers of drugs and alcohol in the future. If that scares you, we call that a healthy fear. Because I know I talk to my grandkids about it, and I talk to my grandkids about it because I want them to know if somebody come to you with these things, tell me or tell them no. Because my grandkids was watching their parents drink. You know, I don't know any of their mothers except for the youngest child was born testing positive for drugs, and his mother was using heroin, marijuana, and methamphetamine. So we know he may be predisposed to it, so we're going to have that conversation with him so that if it comes his way, he won't like it because he was born with it in his system. So one of the things in talking about this is it is okay for parents to take that time and put on your poker face, but learn how to handle awkward questions with age-appropriate responses. As much calm as you can muster, because 66% of upper elementary to high school students say their parents are the reasons they will and won't drink. But your voice matters, so speak up, parents. Be specific. Now, Crystal, what do you want to add to this conversation? Because you know I know your story. I don't know what you know that I know, but I know part of your story. But what do you want to add to this, Crystal?
Okay, my story is public, actually. But, I have had to talk with my children because I am in recovery, personal recovery. I have 23 years sober. And so my struggle was real in coming out of the neighborhood. And so what happened for me is I got into the field of HIV/AIDS, STD. And so it taught me how to have the talk first about sex. And I know this is about drugs and alcohol. However,
it goes hand in hand.
And so when I was able, because my children were young, really young when I got sober, they were 3, 4, and 7. And so by the time they were adolescent, like 10 years, 11 years old, so forth, it became easy because I had been doing prevention and education and teaching classes and going into the schools, into the jails. And so when I would practice what I preached in the field and bring it home and, you know, kind of try it on my children, and because I had to do condom demonstrations and all this, so then it became a little more subtle. And so then my kids in turn start telling their friends, oh, talk to my mom, she'll, you know. And so it came fairly easy. And so my thing would be to parents, if you're not particularly comfortable in having the drug and alcohol conversations or the sex conversations, find your local programs that you know, that they will show you how they have different pamphlets on so many just straight talk conversations and how to go about it if you're uncomfortable with it, because I never want to be a hypocrite and oh, don't do this and do, you know, and then a lot of people is like, well, you know, you did it. So, like, how can you say, oh, yeah, that doesn't make it right because I did it. It just makes it, you know, my experience, and I'm able to share that. So I try to be as transparent as possible. However, I still have to draw the line as mommy, grandmommy, and so forth.
And you know what, Crystal? I'm going to piggyback off of what you said because I got to say it. Now, when I was transitioning, moving away, you was a teenager, I believe, because I know you're much younger than me. I was hurt when I heard you was on drugs. I was like, not Crystal, no. But I understood because I remember your mom. I saw that. And I saw across the street. I saw the Baylocks. I saw that. I saw Lester. I saw all up and down that end of the street. And it was traumatizing. It was very freaking traumatizing. But by that same token, you knew that my mother, we had party house, because my mother believed I would rather for my kids to get high at home than to get high in the streets. And you know my sister was a hot mess. Now, a baby sister was a little different, but you know, because you hung out more with them than you did with me.
Right.
And even when I was at a picnic, somebody came to me and said, Jeanette, you want a beer? I said, when have you ever seen me drink? And he had to think about it. He's like, I've seen you drink before. No, you haven't, because I didn't. I was too scared because I didn't want to keep that generational curse going. So then when my son was born, my mother gave my son gave him Hennessy at the age of two. I wanted to knock the heck out of her. I was pissed off because she didn't do it in my face. She did it behind my back. Not realizing his father was an alcoholic, you an alcoholic, we got a bunch of drug addicts in our family. Why would you do that? But she didn't know no better. But what she did was she opened up a can of worms because she couldn't have this conversation with him because she would sit there and get drunk with him. And then when he became an alcoholic, she wanted to blame it on me. I'm like, you ain't putting that one on me. But the one thing we have to do, as a parent, we have to address these areas of crucial skill building. Like the old saying goes, action speaks louder than words. And while words are of mighty importance, there are a few actions we can take that don't seem related to what we call building alcohol, drug resistance skills, but they totally are. We have to address peer pressures. We have to spend time with our children. We have to instill healthy habits of alleviating stress. I remember my son came home from preschool and said, this teacher trying to teach me my ABCs, I need a drink. I looked at him like, what the heck did he just say? But the problem was, it was getting on his nerves. So, surveys show that the average kindergartner bring home three times the recommended amount of homework each day, and the pressure only grows from there. A compelling reason to spend your time with your kids outside, developing hobbies and support, signing them up for extracurricular activities. These are ways to build their self-esteem and teach them how to reduce stress. Because what you don't want to do is teach them that every time you got a problem, go get high. That was one of the reasons why I did get high. Because I felt if I got high, the same problem that existed was going to still be there when my high went down. Then I bought a drug rehab.
And you know what,
you're
very unique as far as being in a neighborhood and seeing as much as we saw and experienced as much as we experienced. And for you to make it out without any substance use, you know, it's shy of a miracle. And because the smell and the reaction of alcohol, I've never been drunk in my life, and I've maybe took one or two drinks. And because I've seen how my mom act and how she looked, and I said, I would never do that. I would never, you know, and then I found myself on crack. Go figure, right? And so because I was such a turnoff, it just, like, the smell of it just grossed me out. But then I found myself needing a way out to escape my reality. I ended up on a more harder or drug at the time. And so, yeah, a lot of kids will say, no, I never, because my mom. But then we have to be very careful that they don't pick up some other, habits or something like that. So, yeah,
well,
you're very
I didn't realize, but where it affected me was I was violent. I was aggressive. I would fight. And I didn't know it made me angry. That I didn't know. And my thing became food. I had the food addiction. So I beat you up and take your food. But I wasn't going to sit there and get high and get drunk with you. I'd jack you up and take your food. So that was my thing. So I wasn't perfect. But by that same token, I just wasn't going to do that. And I wasn't going to be sleeping with everybody in the neighborhood. We ain't doing that, you know. But another thing is, like I said, instill healthy habits for alleviating stress and encourage a love of reading. A lot of times you want to educate your kids. You want to teach them things. And you don't want to gross them out. Because if you gross them out, it makes them more curious. And like I said, you have to be the one to get into your kids' head before the streets get into their head. And I'm going to tell you another thing I saw too, Crystal. A lot of the pretty girls got turned out. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
But that was about control. I never wanted nothing controlling me. I dated drug dealers, but they ain't never gave me no drugs. They ain't never said, hey, Jeanette, you what? Never. Never. And I had went back and I told them, I appreciate that. I thank you for that. That you thought enough of me to not even try. Wouldn't even let me get you at their house. You know, so I didn't get to do all that. So, okay, now starting this conversation, and we know it's never too late to start the conversation, because even though talking to your children about drugs has never been easy, and now with the upcoming, we know with the legalization of marijuana and what's going on with alcohol and fentanyl and opiates, and a lot of parents are walking on tiptoes because they're afraid that people go start talking about what they've done, but there are some benefits and risks, pros, and cons as it relates to this conversation. Now, one of the things is, if we're telling them, or it says, that's not saying that drugs are great, so get high, but a lot of times I want to say, we give, as parents, we give kids mixed messages, and we need to be mindful of that. And since you guys brought up sex, I was trying to keep it not on sex, because I need to do a topic on that, but I'm going to take it back to sex. If you tell a child, I don't want you to get pregnant, but I'm going to buy you some condoms, or that's not teaching a child about STDs. But if you tell a child, here, I'm going to let you drink, but just drink at home, that's mixed messages. I'm going to start with you, Amalia. What do you think about the mixed messages that some parents give their kids?
Well, I think that's a generalism with any topic when you're a parent. You can't send mixed messages where it's okay one day to do a certain behavior and then it's not okay the next hour, and sometimes it's punished and sometimes it's rewarded. So I think that's a general rule of thumb when it comes to any parenting topic. It's just, when you're trying to reinforce a certain behavior, you don't reinforce it one day and punish it another, which is very confusing.
Okay. Chris, what do you have to say about the mixed messages? Because parents are notorious for giving mixed messages.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Especially with relationships. And not even so much of the sex thing. It's a lot of, I know for me, before I got married, I would date, but I wouldn't bring them home, or I had all these stipulations based around my kids because I didn't want my kids to get the wrong message, the mixed message, and so I would tend to keep them away if they weren't, they didn't pass the 30.
Now, what about with drugs or alcohol? Because, like I said, my mom kept alcohol. You know my mom would let people smoke weed in her backyard. You know that. I remember it took one of my friends telling me, Jeanette, your mother ruined a lot of people's lives. I didn't look at it like that when I was a teenager. But my mother felt as long as everybody was in the patio, she could control that. She couldn't.
And you know
because
what? Because
now people are in
really
rehab, people are dead, people.
I mean, but your mom was a pillar for a neighborhood of people, despite, and I don't agree with whoever told you that, because from my eyes and seeing Jean, is this woman held a steady career, job, home, and three girls very well. And so you, if you look from the outside of you all, it was well put together. And so that's what we saw. You know, you guys were very educated and had everything, you know. And so, but on the flip side of that, she, and I think too, Thea around the corner, there were several parents in that neighborhood that would let people smoke weed and drink at the house, and it was safe. And so I don't know. It's kind of yin and yang. I don't know.
Now, because I know with me growing up, with me as a parent, and my kids now are 33, I think my son will be 34 this year, and my daughter will be, she'll like to be telling her age, but I think she'll be 31, so 31 this year. I wouldn't allow that in my home. And my son would try to have kickback parties, and boy, when I would get home, everything would be cleared out. When my son would be drunk, he would hide it from me. Because he knew I didn't tolerate it. I didn't condone it. I didn't want that happening in my home. Now, there have been times that my son said, Mom, we got to go pick up so-and-so because he's drunk. Mom, I don't want nothing to happen to him. And I would go and rescue kids and help kids, but I wouldn't let them do that in my home. And I would
Absolutely.
Talk to them.
Absolutely.
I would definitely talk to them. I didn't judge them. I didn't shame them. Mm-hmm. I didn't embarrass them, but I did not condone it.
And that's my thing. I've never had a smoke or anything at my house. My kids were babies when I got sober. So goes to show, I have never had any drugs, alcohol, or anything at the house. However, coming out of Compton and living where we live, that just was acceptable then. Now it's Ooh. Not. We didn't. When you know better, you do better. And back then, we didn't see quote unquote people sober and you know taking a stand for this. And no,
Correct.
We didn't see that. Like if you had a two parent home and they had a steady job and you had some kids that were well put together and you know then that was like that was the best we're gonna get right now. And so it's different now. It's different. We know better, and so we do better. We
right.
teach our kids
right.
and then our grandkids better. So
correct, and that is so true because like you said, I always say that all the times when you know better, you do better. And because we didn't know nothing about mental health issues back then, we didn't know anything about drug and alcohol counseling back then. We didn't know the effects on the brain. We didn't know any
right.
of that. We had no idea. Now, and like I said, and parents play a key role. So I want to encourage individuals, especially parents, you got to know your role. You got to know how important you are and how significant you play in your role in preventing and dealing with alcohol and drugs. Because a lot of times parents feel like, I can't say nothing to this person or the child's not going to respect me. But it's a teachable moment. It's never A person is never too young to start, but you do want to make it to where they understand what you're talking about. Now, I'm going to give you some basic guidelines to assist your parents. Listen before you talk, because sometimes, like I said, it either has been brought to your attention, you can smell it, you don't want to accuse them and they're not doing it, so you don't want to do that. But by that same token, if it's being brought to your attention, if you're suspecting, or if you're having like Molly was talking about a teachable moment where you see someone drunk in the alley or, you know, they see this, they may question you, and especially on television. It's so glamorized on television because the art of advertisement is powerful. So now you got to advertise to your children, too, in regards to what not to do. But listen before you talk. Encourage the conversation because as parents, we want to have all the answers. And sometimes we're so anxious to share our wisdom or our opinion that we don't take the time to listen. So
Absolutely.
When we're doing that, we got to listen to our kids because even if we don't initiate the conversation, there may be times that the child may come to you because somebody offered it to them or they're afraid. So we need to sit down and stop what we're doing because we need to listen to our child right now because our child is in trouble. Talk
and
to your
can
child.
I just interject? One yes. last thing, please. And that's not to say that I didn't have a lot of days, weekends where my kids came home drunk in just a hot mess. Now, let's please be clear, because my lifestyle is not their lifestyle. My experience wasn't their experience. However, they weren't raised in it. They didn't see me do it. At that time, I was good and saved, and I didn't even curse. And so with that, you know, my first experience it with my oldest daughter, she's 31 now, and she came home drunk, like before Easter, like really? And I'm good and saved, and we got to go to church for Easter, you know? And I told her, if I got to prop you up with a stick, you're going to church. And she was freaking.
Girl, let me say this. There was times when I would be in church, I would be so mad. I would be at the altar, and Pastor Hammond, may God rest his blessed soul, but somehow they knew my son. The deacons would go pick him up. I'm at the altar. They would bring his drunk, smelly butt to the altar standing next to me. Girl, all I could see is jupe. I would be ready to knock the hell out of him. I would be so mad. My parents would be like, daughter. My son said there was times they would pull up on him. He'd be in a car. People be smoking weed. They knocking on the window. The deacon's picking him up to take him to church. Oh, I would be mad. But they were trying to save his life. And he would drive me freaking nuts. I would be so I was more mad than I was embarrassed.
The stupid stuff
he would do. I was like, my son had no reason. But the thing I learned, honey, DNA was no joke. No freaking joke. I tried to escape it. I tried to take my son out of that environment, but it was still in him.
And that's my daughter's father. He was a beer drinker, alcoholic, and then her granny, you know, my mom, it skipped me as far as alcohol is concerned. And then my oldest, you know, she's still to this day, but back then she was still in high school, fresh on her way out of high school. And I experienced it two or three times, and I thought to myself, wow, look at this. You know,
I know, and it's hard. It's hard for parents. And I know we're running out of time, but I want to get this information out there because, see, we got to have a follow-up on this one because this is, okay. So. Talk to your child, ask an open-ended question. Talk to your child regularly about their feelings, about their friends, about their activities, and listen to what they have to say as much as you can. And sometimes it's not easy, but try to avoid questions that have a simple yes or no answer. Be involved. Be involved in your child's everyday world. Get to know your child's friends and continue to educate your child about the importance of maintaining good health, whether it's psychological, emotional, and physical. You want to let them know that it's not healthy. It's not, you know, your life can cause a problem in your life. So you want to make sure that you are involved. Also, set expectation and set limits and consequences. Make it clear that you do not want your child drinking or using drugs and that you trust them not to. But when they break your trust, have consequences. Talk about possible consequences of drug and alcohol use, both legal and medical, and be clear about what you will and do or not do if they break the rules. Now, I want to say this because a lot of parents, and Chris, I'm going to say your name, but a lot of parents don't know now. Back then, when we were growing up, we didn't know anything about contributing to a delinquency of a minor. We've never heard of that. But now, parents are going to jail. If you are allowing kids to have kickback parties, use drugs and alcohol in your home, social services are getting involved, kids are being removed from the home, and most kids are removed from the home because of two things, domestic violence and drug and alcohol use. So if you are knowingly exposing your kids to drugs or letting them get high, that is a CPS case, and that is reportable. So parents are now being told when they come in even to me see me for therapy, I tell them, I want you to know that you can go to jail for this. Now they're learning the hard way. Be honest and open. Care about what your child is going through as they may face decisions that will affect their lives now and in the future. Be positive. Talk about the family history. And if, like I said, the internet is an excellent, excellent resource. Amalia, is there anything you want to add to this show in regards to how to talk and how to engage in this conversation?
Am I back on? I accidentally tweaked out
you
for a little bit.
You didn't have to check on us for that.
Oh, okay. No, I think you're hitting all the topics. I think the only thing that we haven't really talked about is the reasons, which you just mentioned. Like, you know, a lot of times I'm trying to flash back to when I was a teenager many, many moons ago, and I think if you come at teenagers in a way that's, you know, controlling or nagging, or pretty much with anyone, if you come at them that way, that they're just going to automatically shut down. But I think if you explain to them there's nothing that you do or anything that you can say that's going to stop me from loving you, and this is very difficult for me to talk about, but I need to talk to you for these reasons, because we have a history of drug abuse or substance abuse in my family, because I've seen this with my own eyes, and this is what your future can be. The decision is yours, but I'm here to give you the information or want to talk to you. I don't want you to feel afraid or ashamed of what you've done. But I think most importantly, too, I think as a human or as a parent, we always have to always speak the truth so that we are trustworthy. And I think in relationships, when it's mothers and daughters and fathers and sons, and if there's that trust has been broken, then that's really one of the major key components to having an open communication with anyone, really. So you always have to speak the truth and expect the same from the other person. And communication, when we teach communication skills, that our main things is that you have to expect the truth and also be that truth that you expect from the other person.
Got you. And that is true, Amalia, because you do have to be honest. And like I said, start young. It's natural to want to shield your child from the dangers like drugs, at least as long as you can. But in fact, you should start even in preschool years, and for a lot of different reasons. Because, I mean, there's been episodes where people brought heroin to a daycare and for Halloween, and the kid didn't know that it was heroin. But you don't want another kid to say, ooh, that's heroin. But by that same token, they should know. Approach it differently for different ages. With drugs, and we're talking about, with drugs use affecting more families these days, you can't start too young, but you do want to start talking. Sometimes if you have more than one child, start with the youngest child. Having a general conversation about making healthy lifestyle choices is key. And that's what it is. It's talking about your lifestyle choice. You don't want to start making them think that everybody's bad or I can't hang around so-and-so. But you also want your kid to know, too, because we'll say, oh, well, Uncle so-and-so is drunk right now. But they also need to be aware of some of the behaviors that occur, because they are in danger when you expose them to people that have been drinking or using drugs, too. The discussion with tweens, now slightly older children can understand the difference between municipal and non-medical uses, and they hear about the negative side effects. But keep your discussion about substance focused on the present long-term consequences, because when you start giving them two different meanings, it starts becoming more confused. And getting through tough teens. As children get older, they're going to hear more and more about drugs from people other than their parents, their peers, other adults in their lives, and the media they consume. That's where they get a lot of information from. So you want to make sure that you are addressing that, but keep talking. Don't give up. You got to know when to bring up the conversation. You need to know when to listen. You need to know when to let them talk. You need to know about asking questions and talk about peer pressure. So those are some of the things. Amalia, when we're talking about this and not only addressing the behaviors, but when we talk about behaviors, younger children in particular might find it hard to understand that someone, why they would choose to use or even abuse drugs, and knowing that they're not a bad person, and why they're not making good decisions. I think that was part of my issue growing up. I couldn't understand why people did what they did, but I later learned some people, it was used to celebrate. Some people, they used it to grieve. Some individual, they used it because of trauma. There was a lot of different reasons, but I did not understand it growing up. So now I have more insight in regards to why people use, but now we're trying to turn it around to try to help individuals, but we got to remember to focus on the problem, not the person. We have to understand that addiction is a disease, not a character defect. And parents should keep in mind that they can talk honestly and with concern about drugs without demonizing those who struggle with abuse. Because children and adolescents can easily recognize the negative consequences of the disease without unfairly demonizing people who are ill. Because when we start talking about this, Amalia, And I went in kind of to the overdose because, like I said, I'm the owner of the Center for the Treatment of Addiction. I have three office locations in Orange County. I have one in Fullerton, one in Garden Grove, one in Huntington Beach. I also work out of my co-therapist office, Dr. Lisa Romaine in Marietta, and I have the J.A. Precious in Oceanside. But one of the things I want to say, even as a marriage family therapist, is when we're talking about addiction, addictive disorders, I'm also a SAP professional, which is individuals don't realize that if you start using at a young age, it's harder to stop as an adult. It affects individuals within their employment. It affects individuals within their relationships. It affects them financially. So with all of those things that people are hearing, it's like, why would I even want to get involved in that if it's going to be a long-term later, something that's going to be affecting me later on in my life? And when we're talking about overdose, Amalia, I found a lot of information about teens and overdose. Let's talk about that a little bit because we only got about 4 more minutes left in the show. What are some of your comments in regards to that?
To teens and overdose, well, I think it's a combination of the peer pressure. I mean, I went to a very affluent high school where drugs were accessible and really difficult drugs to get were very easy to get. And I think a combination of the peer pressure as well as the kids not knowing their limits and not knowing how much to take or, you know, they want to party hard. And so a lot of times it was accidental overdosing where they just did not have the information to control this substance or to maneuver it or not know how to use it. So it's unfortunate. And, you know, sometimes, like you mentioned earlier, it can just be that one time because I do know of a couple people that it was their first time and they have had lifetime, they will be handicapped they have disabilities because of it for the rest of their lives and they only tried it once, but it was a bad batch. And unfortunately, now their parents are the ones that have to take care of them for a disabled child for the rest of their lives. So it is.
And you know what? And we're not even talking about the DUIs. You know, people are getting killed. You brought up to that case about the, affluenza with the rich kid that killed those individuals, killed those four people, and he was drinking and driving. So, I mean, it's totally out of control, whether it's a hardcore substance. I get to talk about the vaping, but that's another one. But it's out there. But I want to say that there is drug counseling. Is drug abuse or addiction taking over your life? If you find that it is, there is help out there. Now, a lot of times individuals think that it's too late, they give up. You know, ultimatums don't work, so we go stop with the ultimatums. But drug counseling can provide individuals with guidance, support, and a sober living skills. So if your teen is struggling with an addiction and you're noticing that things are happening when your kids are coming home with bloodshot eyes, they're coming home with an odor, you know, you find it in their backpack, the teachers are telling you, people are telling you, you're listening to their conversations. You know, people don't realize that kids, when they first start being given drugs, they may be getting it for free, but then later on they're being charged for it and they're afraid because they owe people money. You know, so there's a lot of different things that occurs when we're talking about this culture and talking about the behavior, because these are things you want to communicate. A lot of times people say, well, I get it for free. No, you're paying a price. Your price is your body. Your price is your mind. Your price is your attitude, and your price is your perception. So we need to be mindful of that. Now, we're running out of time. If you want more information about rehab, there's several different things that you can do. You could talk to the schools. You can go, there are places within the community, which are nonprofit organizations. You can Google. You could call 211, which is InfoLink, to find rehabs in your area that work with teens and young adults. Because, again, the human brain is not developed until age 25. So what you don't want to do is not have the resources or find an excuse to try not to get your kids to help because you're afraid. Let them know that you care. Talk about the risk. Talk about set the expectation. But remember, focus on the problem, not your child, because your kids need you, and they will listen to you, but they need to know that you care. And like I said, if you have been in recovery yourself, my hat's off to you because you did the work. But now make sure you saved your child. Now, Amalia, I want to thank you for joining me today here, and you enjoy the rest of your vacation. I want to say, again, when you know better, you do better. Tomorrow, I am going to be on the air with Pastor Dan Estelle. We're going to be talking about From the Pulpit to the Couch. And tomorrow's topic has to do with don't let your mistakes become your excuse. So you can join in on that conversation. Be sure to follow me by clicking on a link to follow the shows. If you have any topics that you want me to discuss or topics of interest, you can email me at jabneylmft@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio with Jeanette Abney and Amalia Lamb for helping me here. Thank you.
Bye.